Chapter 15. Conspiracy.
Gracklestug?
Beniago asked, more than stated. An older scout named Binifane, once scarred in a long-ago battle where he had been saved by Zacnafane himself, back in the days when both Binifane and Zacnafane wore the surname of Simfrey.
Duergar?
Zacnafane asked.
By the Nine Hells, I hope that's not the case, Beniago answered. I do so loathe those ugly little dwarfs. But if it is so, then spread the word to the others that Duergar are fast to anger and more formidable than is often believed.
Were we bound for Gracklestug, the Hunsruns missed the most direct passage, Binifane explained.
So we can shortcut the route and arrive ahead of them? Asked Beniago. The scout considered it for a moment, then shook his head.
I would not recommend such a course. None know the tunnels of this area better than the Hunsruns, except, perhaps, the two newcomer priestesses we've spied among them. If they are avoiding the direct route, there must be a reason.
If Gracklestug is even the destination, Zacnafane said.
True enough, Beniago agreed. Continue the scouting. Tell Deer that I want a new count if he can get close enough to the Hunsrun party.
7 men, 2 priestesses, plus these other 2 who are not, we believe, Hunsrun. And of course they're slaves, somewhere in the order of a score of bugbear porters and lesser goblinkin.
Exact count, Beniago clarified.
They are slaves, the count is fluid, Binifane reminded him. Already on at least 2 occasions since our departure from Enzo Berenzon, the Hunsruns have captured and added some goblinkin, and we found 1 bugbear dead on the trail, cut by drow blades.
If only the brutes would accept their place and learn to listen, Beniago said with a sigh.
Keep eyes on them very near.
With a half-bow, Binifane rushed away.
I hope it is Gracklestug, Beniago said when he and Zacnafane were alone once more.
You just said the opposite.
Because I suspect the alternative and fear it, particularly with Zacnafane in my party. Zacnafane arched his white eyebrows at that curious response. The alternative is a small and hidden gnomish outpost struck out from Blingdenstone, Beniago explained.
Blingdenstone?
A Zverfneblin city not far afield of Menzo Berenzon. It is no secret among the matrons, but rarely discussed, because it is of no importance and poses no threat. If we are bound for that outpost, I expect there may be a fight, and I do not want one with the Hunsruns, and particularly not with 2 priestesses whose house we do not know among them.
Particularly with Zacnafane among your ranks, Zacnafane echoed.
Your feelings about priestesses of Loth are well known, as are your generosities to those who are not drow.
Zack considered Beniago's statement and shrugged, unable to deny it. Deep gnomes?
I did not know. That's the whole point. Few know, and it is better kept that way. The city of Blingdenstone is but a few miles from Menzo Berenzon as the Thokwa tunnels, though it would take a difficult roundabout route to get near to them.
We are near that city?
Beniago shook his head. We are near the outpost. Some gnomes have come out of their fortified home. Perhaps the veins there run thin now, or perhaps they have found more valuable riches, and they must be valuable indeed for the Zverfneblin to dare to venture into the open Underdark.
Zacnafane shook his head at a loss.
You did not know because there was no need for Matron Malice or anyone else to tell you, Beniago explained.
I would not expect the matrons to suffer them to live.
The costs of rooting them out would be great. Zverfneblin are cunning little beasts and quite adept at rigging entire tunnels to collapse. There is no gain in destroying them, particularly at that hefty price.
Zacnafane considered that for a long while, trying to make some sense of it all.
When was gain ever the only motive for the drow to strike out and slaughter anyone who was not drow?
Zverfneblin are not warlike, Beniago said, as if reading Zack's mind.
Ah, Zack said, figuring it out. You do business with them.
I do nothing, said Beniago.
Jarlaxle, then.
Sometimes, the Bayenri warrior admitted. But they are not eager trading partners. If the Hunsruns have made inroads with them, if indeed they have set up some arrangements with one or another of their gem and mineral merchants, then I expect trouble. He looked Zack directly in the eye as he added,
And if there is trouble,
I expect Zachnephane to know which side of that trouble he is on.
What does that mean? An indignant Zachnephane returned.
Think of gnomes as halflings, Beniago replied. Zachnephane didn't miss the reference, particularly given the smarmy tone from the Baenri warrior. Also, they had just come from the cave a couple 10 days earlier where the incident had occurred.
I do not pretend to understand why you would do such a thing for the sake of a few slaves,
Beniago bluntly added. But know this, Zachnephane. If the Hunsrins are indeed heading to Blingdenstone, or an outpost of deep gnomes, any mercy you decide upon had better not endanger any of the Bregendierf soldiers under my command. They have come out here in the wilds of the Underdark trusting me, and I'll not have that threatened by a commoner warrior whose heart is too big for his brain.
I do what needs to be done, Zachnephane retorted, and I do it well.
That is all that is expected of you, Beniago replied. For some reason I cannot fathom, that is all Jarlaxle expects of you.
What else is there?
Indeed, Beniago said with an eye roll, and he moved away.
Zack's right hand slid down to his hip to clench the hilt of the sword sheathed there.
He did not shy from a fight, and was more capable than almost any other in Menzel Baranzon at winning one. But now he understood that those around him didn't trust him.
The halfling slaves from Chedna Saad were no threat, he said to Beniago's back. They were helpless and caught, and they knew it. There was no fight to be had, just a slaughter.
Beniago turned about. And Zachnephane did not think that a worthy sport?
No, he admitted.
Why? Beniago asked. Why would you put any value at all on the miserable lives of surface dwellers? Why would you suffer one who does not follow Loth to live?
Does Jarlaxle follow Loth? Zachnephane retorted. Does Bregendierth? The Oblodrin Camoriel, who would prefer the company of Illithids, does Beniago?
Take care, Zachnephane. I am the nephew of Matron Mother Baenri, who is as near an avatar of the Spider Queen as might be found in Faerun.
And your loyalty, Beniago Kurth? To Matron Mother Baenri or to Jarlaxle?
Jarlaxle understands and approves of the role I play. It has been many years since you have been a formal part of Bregendierth. Perhaps it would serve you well to speak less and listen more.
Perhaps. But I can't listen when you have not answered my question. Does Jarlaxle follow Lolf?
He does not fight against her.
Nor did the halflings.
Only because they were helpless, as you just said. Do you think if the situation had been reversed, the vile little men would have stayed their blades?
It was a good question, one for which Zack had no easy answer.
He thought that if those halflings had known what was in his heart, then perhaps they would have let him go free, as he did them. He couldn't be sure, though.
That is what I thought, Beniago said against Zack's silence, and he went on his way.
Zachnephane remained in the small side chamber alone for a long while, fending off the weight of the world. In these moments of uncertainty, it fell to the weapon master as if the tons and tons of stone above him were too heavy, suffocating him, trapping him. Nearly 3 centuries had passed since the incident with Jarlaxle. It had all seemed a minor thing to him back then. Jarlaxle never mentioned it afterward, and indeed, he and Zack had grown closer subsequently. Clearly, though, Zachnephane's mercy had been seen differently by others in the band, and likely, given that Beniago Kurth had been the one to deliver the revelation, it had been viewed much less favorably in other shadowy corners of Menzo Baranzon. Now he had to be on his guard, that much was clear, and if the fighting started with these Zwerfneblin gnomes, Zack understood that he would be judged carefully and with a cynical eye. The weapon master shook his head at the realization. Any fear of or longing for the judgment of the others would not change his actions in any fight. He would do what he had to do to protect himself and his fellow rogues. But if the battle was ended, prisoners taken, he would not now, as he had not then, be a party to murder.
It's Simvin, Maltzablock Griffinhammer told the borough warden. Got to be.
Quite a claim, mate,
borough warden Belwar Disengulp replied.
Simvin's no rogue, and not young enough to be that stupid.
Not many knew of the Arander, Maltzablock reminded him.
Belwar considered that honestly. The precious metal was quite rare and much in demand, sought after for the beauty of its refined silver-blue appearance and the resistances such armor provided against lightning and fire and even acid. Blingdenstone was thick still with sparkling gemstones and other metals, but the Arrendir veins there had long been exhausted, until a new source had recently been found.
"Cursed Arrendir," Belwar muttered under his breath, for like platinum and mithril, the precious mineral was known to tempt even the strong.
Belwar considered his own climb over his Burrow Warden brothers to get King Schnicktick to choose him for this dangerous mission, all for Arrendir. Would he have done that for gold or jewels?
Yes.
Belwar had fought hard to lead the expedition to find the vein, and had caught a few fortunate breaks when several more senior Burrow Wardens had deferred. Which meant that Belwar Disengulp held a lot of responsibility for the safety of his community here, and his heretofore stellar reputation would take a seriously negative turn if they could not make a go of it. But Simvin? Simvin Rivenstone? There weren't 10 Zwerfnebli in all the kingdom Belwar would have chosen above the clever fellow for such an expedition as this. Simvin had distinguished himself many times in the tumultuous decades. When an Umber Hulk had run roughshod over half the kingdom, Simvin had been the one to get an enchanted quarrel into its backside, allowing the Zwerfnebli diviners to easily track it the next time it went underground, swimming through the stone to try to catch other gnomes unprepared in another part of the many-chambered city. Surely Simvin was not one Belwar would have thought a thief and traitor.
"So you know for certain, or your thinking has led you to Simvin?" Belwar demanded.
Maltzablock hesitated.
"Few know of the treasure we seek."
"Few know that we know of it," Belwar corrected. "Many wag their tongues when they've a bit of my conid squeezings in them. Aye, many roll their eyes, seeing things that aren't even there, after but a few shots of the potent juice. We told few, aye, but I'd be guessing that all out here know well of the mineral."
Maltzablock conceded the point with a shrug.
"Can't be Simvin," Belwar said. "Look harder." With a nod, the younger gnome bowed and rushed away, leaving Belwar with too many unsettling thoughts. It was dangerous enough just being out here, away from Blingdenstone, with its multiple escape tunnels and rooms crafted for ease in summoning earth elementals to help in the defense of the city. The last thing they needed was one of their own cutting deals with the treacherous dark elves, or worse, the Duergar, for the gray dwarves could mine almost as well as the Zwerfnebli, and would probably consider a new vein of Arrendir worth going to war over. They had never mastered refining the stuff. Only the Zwerfnebli could take the blue-green metal and give it that beautiful silver-blue sheen. But even raw, the metal would bring a fine price. Even as he went through that thought process, Belwar couldn't find any sense to it. Blingdenstone used the wealth of their trading for all, and no Zwerfnebli in the city wasn't given a fine life. The best wine, the best food, superb clothing, comfortable bedding, all of it, was provided by King Schnicktick to every one of his subjects. How might one of his comrades out here in the wilds be tempted to steal from the others, or worse, betray them to dark elves or Duergar, when they would reap the benefits anyway? The Burrow Warden could only sigh. He had seen this before, of course. Every city had moldy mushrooms ruining the barrel. But Belwar had handpicked this adventuring troop. It made no sense. Simvin? That made less sense still, but Belwar knew Maltzablock well and had never known that one to be overly suspicious or conspiracy-minded. It was all an added weight on the shoulders of Burrow Warden Belwar. He was in command here, out here in the wilds, surrounded by lethal enemies, and with an important task in hand. That would be difficult enough without betrayals. With such treachery among this small group, the entire mission seemed impossible. Zacnafane crept along the intertwining tunnels, one deliberate and slow step at a time. He didn't dare make a sound, didn't dare step hard enough to cause vibrations in the stone. He was well versed in the region he and the others had entered, and agreed with Beniago's decision to send all off alone. Two together would alert the burrowers, if any were about, and Zacnafane knew what had created this winding, overlapping, intersecting, and often forking maze. The smaller holes were those of Thokwa, worms about as long as a drow was tall, They could move through stone as fast as a drow might walk an open chamber. These didn't scare Zack. He knew well that he could dispatch a Thokwa or several fairly easily, and Thokwa weren't particularly aggressive unless directly threatened. The larger tunnels, however, the ones he could walk upright, were not made by Thokwa, obviously. While the wormholes were smooth, the stone melted by the creatures. These larger corridors were rough-edged, chopped and hewn, and not by axes. No, these had been made by Umber Hulks, giant and fearsome and formidable. Umber Hulks would attack him without hesitation, and Zack had a short list of potential enemies he'd consider more dangerous. If he encountered one, however, at least he, unlike most other drow, had a fighting chance. That was why Beniago had sent him out ahead instead of the main scouts, neither of whom could possibly stand against such an abomination. Or perhaps their earlier conversation had convinced Beniago that Zack was expendable. He took no chances. Every fifth step, he put his ear to the wall, listening for the sounds of an Umber Hulk or a Thokwa burrowing, noises every drow at the academy was taught well. He paused before every bend in the winding tunnels, turning all his senses forward with every subsequent inch he moved. He examined every pile of rubble from afar, for the detritus of Umber Hulk burrowing was most often large enough to conceal a dangerous enemy. Time and distance had no meaning to him. Everything was caution and safety in this one spot of ground he inhabited. If Beniago was impatient, Zacnaphane simply didn't care. His caution paid off. He came up on a bend to the left-hand wall deep in broken stones. As he began to skirt that pile, turning his attention to the tunnel ahead, as he became certain the pile itself was safe, he heard a soft whisper. Up onto the rubble pile he went, carefully picking his steps to avoid upending any loose stones. As he neared the sharper area of the bend, he went down on his belly, crawling to the edge and peered around. The area ahead was more a chamber than a tunnel, a place where many of the tunnels intersected, and not all at the same level, leaving a multi-tiered underdark version of a meadow. Enough lichen and glowworms had settled in the place to give it a brighter aspect than many of the tunnels behind him, affording Zacnaphane a wider and longer view. He saw the deep gnome first, a small, skinny-armed but broad-shouldered fellow dressed in gray, wearing a pickaxe on his hip, a thick cloak back over his shoulders, bulging behind him above a large pack. Across from him, not far, stood a tall drow woman, a priestess, surely, given her wondrous, spider-emblazoned robes. She had her back mostly to Zacnaphane, as if he was peering over her right shoulder. The gnome held something out to her. She took it and brought it in close, then nodded. "You will get this for me," she said quietly.
"I will get this for you," the gnome responded.
"You will get this for me quickly," she said.
"I will get this for you quickly."
"You will be careful."
"I will be careful."
"But if they find you out, then you will run away, back here, back to me."
"Always to you," the gnome replied.
The stilted conversation had Zack's jaw hanging open, but as he tried to sort it out, something else came to mind. He had to run down there and join in the conversation. He started to move, then caught himself.
No hurry, he told himself, or thought he told himself. They want to be friends with you. There is great gain to be had here.
Zacnaphane closed his eyes and fought off the compulsion, then opened his eyes just in time to notice something crawling. No, not crawling, but flowing, under the rubble across the way. Every instinct within the warrior told him that something was greatly amiss. The hairs on the back of his neck, on his arms, all stood up tingling. His muscles tightened. He couldn't identify why this all was off, but he knew it to be true. Zacnaphane crept back, hopped down from the pile, and ran away.
"Jarlaxle's band was watching," Olfay told Akara, after Akara's conversation with the deep gnome Simvin. "You picked well the meeting place."
"Of course," Ikara replied. "I have spent a long while preparing this. I know Jarlaxle well enough. He is clever for a man, and he has no intention of allowing House Hunsrin to threaten his extra Menzo Baranzon trading partners, particularly not the Zverfnebli,
and particularly not if they have really found Arandir.
You know him well enough to hate him, you mean?
Ikara shrugged as if it hardly mattered, and of course it did not. The conflict between the two bands, House and Rogue, is inevitable. Both seek glory beyond the city, and that means crossing over each other's pathways. Better for all that this is settled quickly.
Better for us that we get to watch it and enjoy it, Bolfey corrected, and Ikara did not argue the point.
Who will win? Bolfey asked.
Who cares?
Even Elbaenri will care. She favors her lost son and the secret knowledge and power he brings to her.
True enough, but this will be no fight that carries back to Menzo Baranzon, Ikara predicted. This is a prod, a skirmish, and little more.
Although the deep gnome miners may find themselves in the midst of a conflict that is beyond them.
I hold you in a place of honor, to so hold this gnome in your thrall. I had thought them more difficult to dominate.
Not so difficult, particularly when you tempt them with that which they secretly desire. It is the same with drow.
Not with the drow watching your meeting, then, Bolfey explained.
Were you close enough to try?
I was, and I did, and he rejected the intrusion wholly. He may even have sensed it, I fear.
Ikara nodded.
Jarlaxle selects his minions well, and trains them as if they were nobles in his house, even the least of them.
I doubt this was the least of them in any case. I felt strength of will there as great as I have encountered before.
Did you discern his name?
Bolfey shook her head, then straightened and cleared her throat as Priestess Duquelve and some others approached.
Priestess, Ikara greeted her. It is good that you have come. The gnome traitor gave me this. She held up a small piece of the blue-green mineral. He has promised me a sizable haul, enough to outfit Matron Arolina in a full suit of Arandir armor.
And enough for me as well? Duquelve asked.
Ikara smiled. He will come to Menzo Baranzon with us to serve House Hunsrin. He knows the secret of the metal. Your glory will be complete, your ascent to High Priestess assured. Duquelve started beaming at that, but fell back a step and looked at Ikara with puzzlement.
How did you?
Ikara's smile widened.
I told you, Priestess, my sister and I are not of Menzo Baranzon, but we did not seek out the Hunsrin traitors by accident. We have eyes in the city. We know and we approve. When Matron Mother Baenri sees Matron Arolina Hunsrin, bedecked in a shining suit of beautiful Arandir mail, she will want a suit of her own, no doubt.
What Matron Mother would not, Bolfey added.
And to get one of her own, she will eradicate this gnome band and set her own goblin slaves to mining the ore, Ikara went on. But all she'll have is the ore. House Hunsrin will have Simvin in their possession, and the gnome holds the secret of refining. Thus House Hunsrin will become greatly favored by Matron Mother Baenri, and Matron Arolina will use that to hold an exclusive imprimatur from Matron Mother Baenri to trade with Enclave Arak, as we both desire.
As we both desire, Duquelve agreed.
There is another concern. We have noted spies.
It is the mercenary band, of course, Bolfey interrupted her. Bregan D'Earth is what you call them, yes? They are of no concern. If they get too close, we will help you destroy them.
Priestess Duquelve scoffed at that.
They are in the favor of Matron Mother Baenri.
Their leader is, yes, said Ikara.
But the one named Jarlaxle is not here, Bolfey added.
How do you know this?
We already told you, Priestess Duquelve, Bolfey replied.
We have eyes in the city. Jarlaxle is known to us, particularly since we are interested in the Zverfnebli.
Duquelve wore a strange expression as she digested that, looking confused, but as if she were trying to make some connections with her bits of information. There were rumors all through Menzo Baranzon that someone was dealing with Blingdenstone. Both of the visiting priestesses knew, and now, likely, Duquelve was beginning to realize that the rumors were true, and that Jarlaxle was almost certainly the one doing the dealing.
Perhaps it is time House Hunsrin made it clear to Bregan D'Earth and everyone else in the City of Spiders that they and they alone are the primary source of extra Menzo Baranzon trading, Ikara offered.
after giving the Hunsrin priestess a few moments to sort through her puzzlement. Duquelv spent a long while staring at Ikara, and again it was clear she was processing the information and trying to play out all the possibilities. Slowly but surely, she began to nod her agreement. Ikara and Bolfay glanced at each other. "Let the entertainment begin," Ikara telepathically told her sister.